smartest guys around.
Wow.
Are about to break it down like they won the game a million times.
But actually,
they didn't
really win the game at all yet.
Survivor, no way at all.
Survivor Know-It-Alls. Steven, I watched 5 episodes of the Kelly Clarkson show this week. That's just how the Kelly Clarkson show starts. Just as you're singing.
Well, she sings a Survivor Know-It-All song?
This is not yet. Not yet. Okay. It's just like, it's not even like, all right, it's just like, show starts, boom, Kelly Clarkson sings. So,
wow. That's what you're there for. What else are you there for? I don't even know what the Kelly Clarkson show is, but that's what I would
talk
want.
Talk show.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right, here we go. Episode number 4.
Yeah, true. Very
of
true.
Of Survivor 43.
Can't argue with that point.
Drop the 3, keep the 4. And we had Lindsay.
Wow. Lindsay. Nobody saw that. We had big, high hopes for Lindsay.
We did. I was blindsided. I was like, okay, okay, ho-hum episode. Goodbye, Gio. I really had the rug pulled out from under me.
Yeah. And I feel like she was set up, you know, it seemed to be she was set up as someone who is, I hate to say, the mom archetype because she's younger than we are. But you know, in that role, I mean, I guess we're dads, so it's like fair.
But are we the fun dads?
Yeah.
Are we the fun parent?
I'm definitely the paranoid dad, so I would like fit right
who's
in.
Who's the fun parent on the Survivor Know-It-Alls? Who's like, who's the fun parent and who's the disciplinarian? I think Steven's the fun parent on Survivor Know-It-Alls.
Oh, you're definitely the disciplinarian. Oh my God, there's no question. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, in real life, I think I am the fun parent, but depends on the day. Depends on what kind of mood I'm in. Yeah. Steven comes in and he's loosey goosey on the Survivor Know-It-Alls.
Yeah. You know, and had a couple, you know, some whiskey.
Oh,
I don't know. A lot of whiskey.
Oh my God.
No whiskey, just water. Okay. Back to Lindsay, about whom we were highly optimistic. It looked like she was in a pretty good spot in that tribe. She was leading this ladies' alliance.
Yeah.
And, didn't seem to be, you know, there were no, we didn't see the signs. We didn't see the warning signs of the paranoia.
No, we didn't really see it. I'd love to talk that through with you here tonight, among other things. A lot to get to here tonight. I want to invite the chat to write in your questions, and we will take them later on in the show. Just write them in the chat. We will put them aside and get to them later. I am very much looking forward to having the chance to speak with Lindsay. A little bit of a wrinkle, though, in the Survivor exit interview schedule. For one of the first times that I can ever remember, the exit interview, at least mine, is pushed to Friday this week. So I will be speaking with Lindsay coming up on Friday afternoon. So be on the lookout for that. So that's going to be coming your way later on. And I will be talking tomorrow with Survivor 42's Chanel Howell. And looking forward to talking with Chanel, who is big time gamer, strategist. And so looking forward to hearing what she thinks about all things going on. And I will have Maggie Morgan on the Survivor Feedback Show this week. Make sure you subscribe to Rob as a podcast, robisawebsite.com/subscribe to make sure you never miss anything we're doing here on RHAP. Steven, the question that I'm really sort of left with is, you know, there's really like two things that could have happened. One was the story as presented on the show of that it was going to be Gio, and then Lindsay kind of out of nowhere becomes incredibly paranoid. And Lindsay's paranoia really forces James and specifically Carla to reassess the whole thing. And that it seems like from what was presented on the episode, Lindsay would have been fine, would have been safe. Her own paranoia ends up being the cause of her own demise. She was hoisted by her own petard.
Yeah.
I do wonder.
hoist is the past participle of hoise. It's like a very strange idiom. Hoisted is not. I'm sorry. I really debated internally whether I should say anything. I was like, I'm going to look.
I'm glad you did.
On the other hand, like, am I just going to let this like out into the world as hoisted? No, hoist is the past participle. Yeah.
Everybody's like, are we sure Steven's the fun parent now?
Listen, grammar can be fun.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. That's what everybody says. Yeah. I do wonder, was this sort of like, was it a 50-50 of Gio versus Lindsay? And then because of the discussions that were going on, that's what made Lindsay paranoid. And ultimately, like the 50-50 was decided and Lindsay's paranoia was really kind of pushed as the reason to go for Lindsay instead of Gio.
But the story we were told was, and obviously, you know, you're only told a fraction of what happens, but was that Cassidy was the original boot that Gio and Ryan were planning on and that they sold James on. And then Gio became the boot target. We didn't see anything to suggest that Lindsay was a target for any reason other than the fact that she started to freak out. In fact, we have confessionals from James basically saying that, that she would have been safe if she hadn't decided that she was unsafe. And I do wonder, you know, we talk a lot about winning tribes and the dangers of being on a winning tribe. You know, certainly we talk about the winning tribes becoming fractious and having infighting, but I wonder if excessive paranoia could also be a symptom of winning too much because, you know, you come into Survivor day three, you're in tribal council, you know, you kind of like get a handle on the crazy paranoia. You're like used to being paranoid almost. But for this group, they haven't had to worry at all. They've gotten complacent. They've never had to scramble. They've never had to think it's them. Suddenly, you know, day nine, which is, you know, a lot of days in New Survivor, Lindsay's got to go to tribal council. She feels this crazy paranoia and she thinks the paranoia is a sign of something. She thinks it's its own signal, right? Like that's what she says. Like, why am I feeling so paranoid if I'm not in danger? She has a confessional that basically says that or something similar to it. Mm-hmm. So she's like, she thinks she uses her own paranoia basically to justify being paranoid. And then it gets out of control. And I do wonder if like some of that is just from having been on this winning group.
Yeah. We know on Coco, all roads lead through Carla. Carla has been the person that we have seen talking the most strategy. I feel like that there is like a alternative view of what we have seen. And let me just float this past you where going back to some of the things we saw in the first episode, we know that Carla has a good relationship with Gio. They had personal conversations that seem to make us think that Carla and Gio have a relationship. Gio looks like he is closer with Ryan. That Carla also had a relationship with the women where that she was working together, started talking about the Women's Alliance. And then also that it seemed like that there was some overlap with James of who is James's closest ally. We saw in the first episode, Lindsay and James became very close. And then also we saw that Carla seemed to have her own relationship with James. In the first episode, Lindsay says to Carla, hey, if you see me talking to James, just so you know, like we're very close. I just wonder if Carla looked at Lindsay as somebody who they were sort of like having similar allies where for Carla to maintain that sort of spot in the middle with between James and with having Cassidy over to the side, still be able to work with Gio and with Ryan. That I just wonder if for Carla, if it really behooved her the most to have Lindsay be the person to go. Of course, now James has nowhere else to go, no other close ally. She can sort of dictate whatever happens next. And then Lindsay, whether or not she's picking up on that, is, you know, paranoid. And then Carla is really the one driving the bus. Lindsay getting too paranoid. We can't work with this, James. Come on. Let's cut bait on Lindsay.
I 100% agree with you. I think that's absolutely right. And I think it's a great point. I think that,
it's the first for everything.
Well, I mean, you know, the first, like, I think that, you know, we saw, you know, even in this episode, we saw, you know, Lindsay's freaking out. So James says, okay, I'll go handle this. And then James goes and talks to Lindsay. And yes, to your point, like James and Lindsay seem to have a really close relationship. And Carla, you know, has this relationship with Gio, even if she's annoyed by him now and him acting bossy now, you know, she does have kind of this longstanding connection with him, longstanding 9 days. But, you know, so for her, obviously she had this Women and James alliance, but to get rid of Lindsay, then yes, even like cements her position in the group. You know, it cements her relationship with James, who now is, I'm basically repeating what you just said, who now has fewer places to go, keeps Gio around, who's, you know, she's got a good relationship and, you know, who doesn't seem to be as connected with the others. Although Gio, I mean, whatever, it's a 6-person tribe. They're all friends, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we did see Gio go to James with his Cassidy plan.
Yeah. And for Lindsay also, you know, I think that part of it, you know, also for whatever reason, Gio and Ryan never talked to Lindsay. And yeah. So like at what point, like was somebody telling them like, hey, it's going to be Lindsay tonight. And those guys, just like did not even bother trying to talk to her. So there has to have been like, I'm really looking forward to talking to Lindsay because I feel like it was just really presented as like, oh, Lindsay just went off the deep end. Maybe she did. But I just like am trying to figure out if there's maybe some other reason that she might have been feeling some type of way about being the target. You know, which came first, the chicken or the egg?
Well, I would have been very nervous in that conversation with Ryan where like it was just the two of them on the beach and Lindsay kept on saying like, hey, maybe we should talk strategy. And he's like, yes, as soon as we're done with this meal.
Yes.
Like later tonight, maybe tomorrow we'll talk. Let's hold that thought till tomorrow. We can pick it up after tribal council.
Let me finish eating my melon.
Yeah, I mean, it was so strange. I love Ryan. I was very worried tonight that they were setting up a Ryan boot early in the episode because mm-hmm. there was a few weird remarks. You know, we saw, like remarks from some of the people about how, you know, Ryan was getting tired and Ryan was holding up the net and wasn't actually helping out. Mm-hmm. And I was, oh no, not Ryan. So, yes. So as long as it was not him, I was, or Carla tonight, I was happy, but, it was a very strange posture from him on the beach there.
Yeah. Okay. The votes came in tonight. It was, 4 votes for Lindsay, yeah. 1 vote for Gio from Lindsay, and then Gio voted for Cassidy. Right. Is this the old, hey, what if she plays her shot in the dark?
I think that has to be what it is. It's the shot in the dark. And obviously it's going to not be great for the Gio Cassidy relationship, but obviously Gio feels that that's worth it. You know, shot in the dark or idol, right? I mean, you know, Gio doesn't know for sure if, you know, whether there's an idol out there or who has it. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's, you know, and he knows he's getting a vote. He knows Lindsay's super paranoid. And if she, you know, if she does have an idol, maybe she'd play it. Mm-hmm. So if I were, I don't think that's a crazy move from Gio. I mean, yes, it creates some tension with Cassidy, but he feels like he already has tension with Cassidy. What do you think, Rob?
I think it was more the shot in the dark. That's the other thing where, you know, the shot in the dark really does incentivize the players to really, you're crazy. You're like, there's nothing to be paranoid about. Why are you being paranoid? Like, to really drive it home where, you know, there was a point in Survivor history where it's like, yeah, all right, it's going to be you, which doesn't make for exciting television, but I think also can sort of like muddy the waters in terms of like what we're seeing in terms of getting an understanding of what happened. So these are the kinds of things we're gonna have to wait for the exit interview to understand. What was this the right call for some of these key players? For Carla, I think we like this move. Yes. For
fishy for Carla. Yeah, let's get out of the way. Definitely. Great okay. move for Carla. All right. Yeah.
What about for James?
I mean, I think less so for James. And I mean, I think part of the reason why it's a great move for Carla is that it's a less great move for James. You know, I think that is, you know, probably the talking point around Lindsay is she's super paranoid and this is going to be a huge problem for us moving forward. If she freaks out after every vote, you know, or in front before every vote, it's going to create chaos. Like it's manageable now, but like, what about next time? What about at the merge? Is this going to happen all the time? It may not, you know, it may just be a one and done, you know, first tribal council, nobody wants to be the first one voted off their tribe. Maybe she'll, you know, get used to it. So I think, you know, if I were James, this, you know, we know that they're very close allies. We know it's a somewhat fractious tribe, right? We know there's some divisions here. I think it was a mistake for James. I think it's a better move for Carl than for James. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely a much better move for Carla. I, you know, I have to see what James says, maybe to start off the next episode, about why he thought it was Lindsay, whether he felt like that, you know, if it was about the paranoia, if it was somebody that he felt like that he just could not work with, then do you think, is that a valid reason to get rid of somebody you have an ally? And I would love to know from you, if you ever experienced this, that ally is like just getting like very paranoid, where you weren't voting them out. They were not the target, but they've become very paranoid. And how do you work with that?
Yeah. I mean, I have had the experience, you know, of having someone who could be an ally, a hypothetical ally, just be sort of like unmanageable in terms of like what they're telling other people, you know, the chaos they're coming. I mean, this would be like Sierra Reed, who at the Mergent Token Chains, like she did give us, you know, she wanted to work with us in my group. And I ultimately made the call, like, let's, you know, it's too much chaos with her. But that's not like a one-off, you know, it seems like that's what I think about with this Lindsay move. And again, like so much, you know, we're seeing so little of this, but this paranoia seemed to come out of nowhere, right? Like from what we've seen of Lindsay, she's pretty together. She's competent. And you know, if she was erratic for the whole 9 days and then she was super paranoid, maybe I can see more justification for saying, wow, like that was this has been a strain and now it's a worse strain. Like we can't deal with this anymore. But at least from what we've seen, it looked more like this was a kind of intense emotional reaction, you know, in a day, in a couple hours of a day. And I don't know. I think I would just try to like calm that person down. I mean, I think everybody, almost every ally I've worked with had, you know, periods, and certainly me, right? Like periods where like their paranoia would be off the charts and you'd have to like, no, like it's fine. We're fine. Like, you know, and then you'd get voted out. But, you know, right. Like I'm sure you dealt with that, right? Like just like part of the game of Survivor is keeping your allies and yourself from losing their cool in a very, very stressful game.
Another thing worth noting, this is the fourth woman in a row voted out to start off the season. Now, it was not even suggested in the episode, unless I missed it, that Lindsay, part of the reason of getting rid of Lindsay was keep the tribe strong, right. That they were going to, they were looked at challenge strength, which I think came up with the first three women that were voted out of the game. But I mean, this is not a great way to start off the season here, where now there are only five women left in the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll see that in some quick checking. So in Survivor Gabon and then in Survivor Exile Island, it looks like that also four women were voted out to start off the game. I do think that these things are certainly like it is not a great way to start out the game. And I think it's worth discussing whether or not, you know, we want to keep sticking with this three tribe format, because I think this does lead to people voting women out of the tribe, because it sort of is easy to point to, okay, there, you know, this woman is holding the tribe back, which we've seen a couple of times this season. I do think a lot of times, though, it will straighten itself, it course corrects. Like when we get to the merge, I wouldn't be surprised if we see, you know, three, four guys who voted out in a row.
Yeah, I think we can expect, you know, of the people we've seen who are clearly, you know, in it for the long haul. I think, you know, someone like Ellie, Carla. I mean, I've got high hopes for the women of the season. I mean, there's just some incredible characters and players.
Yeah,
I mean, fewer and fewer, but you know, there's like truly, like, you know, I mean, the Carla, you know, Carla and Jesse are like the best, you know, the two people this season so far who just have this incredible stories, edits, that's what's called it. Yeah, it's, you know,
sure. Yeah. Steven,
but I agree.
Yeah. Let's talk about a couple of other interesting things going on. I guess let's start with the camp steal, which then leads into the other thing that went on with the tribes colluding at the challenge. So yes,
before we talk about the camp steal, can we talk about the other part of that reward, which was apparently a menu of reward options?
Yeah, this annoyed me. This annoyed me because, okay, it was all about like, oh, you'll win 10 fish, 10 large fish. Okay, yeah. Great. And it's like, oh, how are we going to eat the fish? And then Noelle says, actually, can we trade the fish for one of the rewards? And then, and Jeff responds, yes, yes, absolutely. You can always trade what the reward you win for a previous reward that was won. Since when?
Never heard that rule before. As though that has always been the case on Survivor.
Yeah, my 9-year-old.
Everyone knows, you know, it's like, come on in, guys.
Yeah, not anymore. My son said, Dad, they can trade for, I guess. Yeah. But Jeff said it, like, you can always trade your reward for, like, don't, like, that's how you know that they just made it up, because Jeff is saying that you, oh, yes, yes, this is always a rule. You're always allowed. You're crazy. Always allowed to trade what you won here for today for, you know, what?
Yeah. I mean, it was never heard of this before. And I mean, so like, why make the reward a reward that one tribe definitely could not eat? Like 10 fish, one tribe does not have flint, no matter what.
I think that when they're thinking all these things through, it's like, oh yeah, great, great. We'll do this. And then we'll take their flint. Oh, great. Then they can't make a fire. Okay. All right. Or they'll have a reward that they have to cook or they'll get sick. Oh, yes, of course. Yes, you can trade for any reward you want.
I don't think it was like a part of the
no,
the thinking behind it was like, oh, wouldn't it be great drama if we gave them their fish and they could no.
They didn't think it through. We're taking people's flint. They can't make a fire and we're giving them fish.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very crazy, very crazy. And typically these things have been like negotiations, right? Like, you know, Jeff loves that. Mm-hmm. His life is fine. Instead it was just like, oh yeah, yeah. Here's the menu. Here's the menu of Survivor rewards that you can choose.
What I will say is that in the past they have had like, okay. And then, you can pick from this reward or the reward from the last challenge that didn't get selected. Like, you know, there have been times where they've had like you can pick this or that, and then sometimes they'll like bring the thing forward. Okay, this didn't get selected the last one, so it's available. It's not like, okay, you know, like you win a feast and it's like, actually, Jeff, we don't want to go to Applebee's. Could we get the cake that you had the other day?
Now, I will say, I mean, typically the rewards get better. That's not always the case. Like, there have definitely been times when I've won a reward that wasn't as good as a previous reward. Is this only up to the merge? Like, after the merge, can you go back and get any of the previous rewards that you want? I mean, again, like, it's definitely not sequential after. I mean, there's like a rough sense of escalation after the merge, but there's definitely, you know, some marquee rewards that are.
I would not even mind about any of this if Jeff didn't say, yeah, oh, yes,
I feel the same way.
You can always do this. Yes,
that's where I was going. Yeah, that would be fine. Like, that would be a cool thing for him to say. Like, yes, go ahead. Like, that's fine. Like, and then adds a little bit of strategy to rewards, but like, this idea that it's always been a thing.
Sure. Just say, oh, this is one of the things in the new era that we just installed.
Yeah. It's so funny. It is a cool idea. There's pre-merge. You will very rarely want to go backwards. Sometimes, you know, if you don't have a tarp or you have a really crappy camp situation, you might want to get like a tarp and
tarp's
some of
the
like, comfort items rather than, you know, like sweets, you know, if it's like a small reward, you know, you might want some of those camp supplies, but I think it's a good change. I think it could be good.
Yeah. Okay. So, they got the fruit. Okay. Then, cause I was confused when she starts talking about the fruit. I'm like, oh wait, is she saying they're going to steal the fruit that they got from the last? No, they're getting a new fruit basket, ready to go instead of the fish. So they have to decide, what are we going to do? And it seems like it's like, okay, what do they even have to steal? Okay, so Baca has a fishing kit, but they said, no, we need to go steal Coco's machete. That'll do them in, because they've won. They've clearly, like, they are indestructible, because the other tribe has lost one person. They have lost nobody. So obviously this tribe is they cannot be stopped. We need to go and take their machete.
By the way, I tweeted this to Mike Bloom.
Yes.
If there is a dominant tribe, you sort of want them to stay dominant. I mean, obviously you don't want yourself to lose, but one of the big lessons of three tribe seasons is that you don't want, or the tribe that keeps winning for the most part, is the one that ends up falling apart at the merge. And so this fixation that they have on, you know, breaking down Coco, and you know, we can talk, we'll talk about this more with, you know, Noelle's and Vessi's decision to help the Coco tribe during their challenge.
They helped Baka.
The Baka tribe. Yes. Yeah. The idea, it's fixation on breaking down Coco is very quite like is dumb. It's not good.
Yeah. But the idea of go to steal the machete, like if they went to Baka and they took the fishing kit, you know, it's like they go there and it's like, you know, you're the only people that had things. Like Baka is like, they'd be stupid to not come and take our thing. Nobody's going to be mad they take the fishing gear.
Yeah, right. And Baka like almost was expecting it. And instead they decide to take Coco's worst fishing gear. Like they for themselves are choosing between two sets of fishing gear. They're like, which will we rather have? The better fishing gear that that Baka has, or the worst fishing gear that Coco has with marginally hitting Coco?
Yes.
And they choose the worst fishing gear from Coco.
Yeah, and some taro root. Now, did you get the sense that, okay, Loose Cannon Cody was going off and the Jesse and Dwight and Noel didn't know actually where he was going?
What do you mean where?
It's, they made it seem like, whoa, well, we don't know they made it seem like that it was up in the air, the decision of where Cody was actually going.
Oh, no, I thought they for sure decided obviously they couldn't reveal this to us, but on the Coco tribe. But the question was, you know, maybe Cody was pushing harder to get the machete and they were all pushing, to get the, you know, just the fishing gear. Yeah. They didn't want to like screw over Coco and like build up animosity. Okay. And that was the question of what will Cody do? The question I have though is, was Cody always going to backpedal? You know, like, because Cody was the one who was saying, oh, we got to get their machete. We got to get their machete. We got to get their machete. Was he always kind of planning this like big sales scheme where he like comes in for the machete, but actually gets a bunch of other things?
I don't think that this was a master plan from Cody. Do you?
I mean, he did a pretty good job.
Yeah.
It was a pretty fun scene.
It was a fun scene. I mean, ultimately, I mean, Carla ends up really seeming to dislike him. I think file that away for later on when we get to further on in the game. I mean, I do think it is a thing for a person to sort of like create a chaotic situation and then also be the same person who is able to extinguish that chaotic situation.
I mean, that was the Tony strategy.
Yes.
Was, you know, always would, you know, he basically didn't he like have a similar thing with like Jeremiah where he like just like went to their camp and just like totally threw it into disarray.
I think that what he had to, I think he won something where he was able to give a clue to a thing, but it was a clue that he already had. And so he gave them like a clue to an idol that had already been found or something like that, just to sort of like unsettle, get everybody mad. So that I thought this was very fun. I like this for Cody. I thought it was a fun scene. Ultimately, it's kind of probably not going to mean anything except for the fact let's just keep an eye on Carla and Cody later on in the season. But then we get to then later on in the episode at the immunity challenge where we see that the Vessi tribe has won the challenge where really, I guess NECA really was holding the back because this was a really great episode for the Vessi tribe. And so now they are the first team to complete their challenge. And now they are now helping out to try to make sure that Baka ends up winning. We have not seen a lot of this in the history of the show, at least in terms of what has aired. The only time in my recollection that I have ever recall anything like this. Do you know where I'm going with this?
No.
Millennials versus Gen X. And it was the vote where Figgy went home. And I think it was Michaela who was like trying to instruct, and I don't remember which team she was helping to try to do the table mates. I think she might have been helping Zeke and David Wright's team. Maybe the chat has it, but she was trying to shout out to try to help the other one of the other teams win the table maze.
Yeah.
It might have actually been Figgy, even though I remember that she did not care for Figgy. It might have been Figgy and Taylor because that they had more millennials on their tribe.
Yeah, not a great strategy overall. I think it's not a great move. You know, regardless of the fact that you do sort of want to keep Coco strong because they are a six and they haven't had a chance to go to tribal council. The amount of, you know, gratitude it buys you will not really affect the game at all. But the amount of animosity that it could buy you could really could affect the game, right? Like if you're the person who is yelling out answers to help the other tribe, you really could create a meaningful target on yourself come the merge. I think it was a really bad move from Noel. And then I think to a lesser extent, it looked like Dwight was helping out too there. Yeah. Right?
Let me just, before we get a lot of tweets tomorrow, Karim in the chat says, Michaela was trying to help. Well, it's fine when you get one and then it's annoying. Like when you get the same one 100 times, Michaela was trying to help Zeke and Michelle said Figgy, Taylor and Adam should figure it out. Okay. So that's the one time I can remember it happening. But you make such a good point about how for the tribes that are like every season, it works out where the tribe that has the most people, the other two tribes gang up on them.
Yeah,
you want that. I mean, and I thought where ultimately we, you know, are going with that. You know, you sort of like that where Coco comes in with six and you have four and they have four going into the merge.
Yeah. I mean, it was less the case with,
that's probably too many people for the merge. Yeah.
Season 41, right. Where, Blue did stay. They were the strong tribe pre-merge. I don't think they lost anybody.
Yeah. And then, I don't think that there was any sort of issue where, Uwa and Yasa were like colluding together, but they planned to that was the plan where, where Evie and Tiffany and Liana were thinking we're going to team up with Shannon and Ricard and then we're going to go into the merge and they're going to work with us.
Right. Right. There's recent precedent, I guess, to not necessarily think that's a slam dunk, but you know, basically until 41, I mean, with three tribe seasons where there was one dominant tribe, that tribe always fell apart. Right. Maybe there's other examples where that wasn't the case, but that was that was almost always the case. I would think you would want that to happen. I mean, I think this is a big mistake for a couple of reasons, you know, from keep Coco strong, you know, like you're saying, let Baka lose, let Baka lose somebody else. Mm-hmm. And then don't be the person shouting out, don't draw attention to yourself as that person. It's not going to win you that many friends and it could win some serious enemies.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because you know what could happen is you have this great plan of, I'm going to go in and be your best case scenario. Okay. They get Baka ends up getting down to two. They lose three in a row and you have your four. And then now you go into the merge and, or however it is, they have, I guess they merge at 12. So maybe, is there anything to that where Coco has to lose one for you to have a numerical advantage if they merge at 12? Otherwise you go into 6-6 and it's going to be a stalemate.
Well, I mean, that's assuming it's a 6-3-3, break or 6-4-2, I think what you're hoping for with that kind of, is that they're not going to stay Coco strong, right? Like, I think what you're looking for,
you're going to pick somebody off,
right? Or that they are going to be so mad at each other. And that's typically been the case, right? Is that, maybe it's different now that it's a shorter game. That was certainly the case when the back in the old days, when you had to make it, 18, 19, 19 days together, And then you came into the merge loathing each other. Now that you have to only have to make it a week and a half, maybe it's different.
Okay. Let's start to get into some questions from our listeners. I want to remind everybody about all of the fine Survivor content that we have coming your way. I told you about the exit interview and, of course, Chanel on the recap and Maggie Morgan on the feedback show. But be sure to catch this weekend the B&B where Mike and Liana are playing games. Shannon Gus is going to be breaking this all down on Survivor Global. Find out why Lindsay lost with David and Jessica. Taryn will have the stock watch. And of course, Bryce and Wendell will bring you the Survivor News edition of the Purple Pants podcast. Steven, let's take some questions from our listeners. Oh, I lost Steven. Hold on. Let me fix this. I know you're still here, but we couldn't see your beautiful face. Okay.
Oh.
All right. Let's go ahead and,
maybe we can talk about this in the Q&A. We didn't talk about Gabler putting a palm frond on them in the middle of the night. That was an insane moment. It's like truly, I don't even feel like the show emphasized how like truly insane that was. You know, he didn't get the music he deserved for that. That was so crazy.
Yeah, it wasn't even raining.
No, it wasn't raining. And I tweeted this, but like palm fronds, they're not soft. It's not like he put like a giant palm leaf over them. You know,
yeah,
it's
like, it wasn't like he weaved a blanket. Spine. Yeah.
You know, this palm frond has a tough spine. It's like decently heavy. It's very awkward. The leaves themselves are kind of like ridgy. They're like sort of like they're uncomfortable. And it was the middle of the night. Like they were asleep. If you wanted to give them a palm frond, you know, cocoon, maybe ask before they're, I mean, truly it was like one of the craziest things I think I've ever seen on Survivor.
He and like, said I feel he like checked it for ants.
Yeah. I feel like you would have to be having a psychotic break to do something like this. Like in the middle, like sleep is so important. Like everyone talks about how tired they are. All they want to do is sleep. How restless you are in the shelter to like put like it's crazy. Unless it's like some kind of like psychological torture. I cannot understand it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Maybe that might have been what he was going for.
Is that what you don't seem as outraged by this as I was?
I mean, it was ridiculous. I would not, there would be no circumstance ever. That I could ever imagine when I would want a palm frond on top of me. There's no circumstance. No.
It's so uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe like if the sun was beating down on me, maybe it'd be shade, but not for because I'm cold.
Yeah. Very, very weird.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Connie wants to know, has Gabler's palm frond put him higher in the boot order than Ellie?
I mean, I would not want to live with the person who was doing that in the middle of the night. Like, you know, you could vote someone out because they were snoring loud at night, you know, because like sleep is so important. It's so hard to sleep. You're cold. You know, the shelter's uncomfortable. someone who's there was a whole segment with like Rupert chopping in the night. Remember that?
Yeah.
Like that is less annoying than what Gabler did. Like, I mean, at least I don't know from my perspective.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So that he still has his idol. So do you think that the tribe dynamics has shifted? I mean, last week we really got the story about how, okay, Gabler is hot. He's upset with Ellie. And maybe that's why he was messing with people because he was mad about that still. But it seemed like that Sammy seemed to be like, okay, Gabler is getting on my nerves.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's, I definitely think this,
but he's,
I mean,
like you said,
there's nothing he can do. Yeah. Nothing they can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, will that idol be good to the merge? Will that be like, does it expire before the
next
merge
tribal council? Yeah.
So he could be emerge immune at the merge boot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Steven, I know this was a big question that people had heading into this episode. What does Florida Lee have to say?
Florida Lee wants to know, hypothetical situation, if it was allowed, do you think Cody could have gotten away with stealing the special beads from the Baca tribe? Two idols for the price of one. Could they give him the beads? I don't think so. I think he needs the note, you know, like basically like the note is the instruction to make the, I don't know.
So first thing is I do not think he would not have two idols if he got all of the tribe beads because it was the necklace with the beads. So I mean, hypothetically, if he found the Beware Advantage on the Baca tribe and then got them all to give the beads, yes, I think that he would be able to do that, but he was not there for that amount of time. It was almost like they told him specifically what things he was allowed to steal when he was there. But ultimately, they seemed to let him play jazz and ultimately take different stuff when he got there. What was interesting to me, though, about it is you have Cody, who had the Beware Advantage, had the presence of mind to know, OK, let me look at the backpacks here. Let me see if anybody has if the beads on the backpacks are still intact. And I don't know if he even thought to do this, but I think he would have been able to tell that somebody on this tribe does have the Beware Advantage if they did not have those very specific large beads.
Yeah, that would have been a tough one, though. Like, you know, he's there to steal their fishing supplies. By the way, do you mind if I inspect your backpacks a little bit?
I think that he could have let me see what else you have around here. And like, I'm not even saying take it. I'm saying
maybe I'll take these beads. Wouldn't that be dangerous?
I don't think he's walking away with anybody's beads, but I'm just saying just see if he can like get a look at the beads and see if they've activated their idol.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. going back to Gabler, Docs wants to know, can Sammy convince Gabler not to play his idol?
I don't think so. I mean, that idol is only good for one tribal council. I mean, honestly, even trying would offend him, right? I think you've got to, you know, that's where Gabler got upset at Ellie, right? Is that she was trying to fox him. And I think like trying would offend him. I think you can't. That would be a mistake.
He got
I don't
very
think
bad.
It's possible.
He was very offended about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. To the point where he's, you know, psychologically torturing them in the night.
Okay.
Yeah.
Steven, what about this question from Sloan?
All right. Sloan asks, would you rather have someone lay a bomb frond over you while sleeping or lay your wet clothes out on the beach to dry?
Okay. So this is like, I think we're taking two things here. Like, Reem laid people's wet clothes on the beach to dry. I don't think that that was actually that bad of a thing, but people got annoyed that she did it. This is the palm frond is actually a super terrible thing to do to somebody.
Yeah, the wet clothes thing has to just be, oh, we're sort of annoyed at Reem already. You know, this whatever she does, we're gonna find annoying. Yeah, the weird like waking someone up by like smothering them. You know, with a tree, that's not nice.
Yeah. Okay. How about this is a question from Rhythm Badge. Should there be a rule change following this immunity challenge that no tribes can help the other during the challenge? Steven, we both agreed that we thought it was not a good idea for Noel to be helping out the Baka tribe, but you don't think they should change the rules, right?
No. I mean, I do like the rule where you can't physically help someone, right? Like Albert was not allowed to help Sophie during South Pacific. You know, but I think like shouting stuff, like you wouldn't want to prevent that. That creates drama. It creates intrigue.
This was fine. I mean, I think it was a poor decision for them to do to send Coco to the tribal council and sort of put their thumb on the scale. That being said, no, I think it goes back to like what you were saying about how you shouldn't. People say you shouldn't be allowed to go through people's bags. No. This is supposedly a show where people are making up their own society.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Steven, how about this question? English 8 Muffin has a question.
All right, English 8 Muffin wants to know, if Baka doesn't go back to tribal, does Gabler's idol last through the merge? Well, we were just talking about that, English 8 Muffin.
Yes, okay. And we are both under the same agreement that, yes, it'll go through the next time he goes to tribal council.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we could include the merge.
All right. Steven, did you see this? Caleb wants to know, hey, Robin Fishback, did you catch Jeff's short video during the ad break where he said that tonight's tribal was exciting and then promoted the Love Boat? Seemed like a pretty straightforward tribal to me.
Well, they're all exciting, Caleb.
Yeah, exciting and new.
Yeah. yeah, that was I didn't catch that, but I heard I saw it on Twitter.
I don't know. They have Jeff like in some sort of like weird set that Jeff is able to record promos and talk about things like the Love Boat. And there was one last week on Instagram that was like, Jeff was like, you got to stay tuned for CBS Reality Weather. You're going to be glued to the TV. So I don't know. Jeff is cutting promos in some sort of like Survivor back lot.
Probably in his house, right? He probably has like a studio. I mean, like, you know, if I'm Jeff, I'm not leaving my home to record some dumb promo. Mm-hmm. Okay. We didn't talk about how, you know, Jeff did the roll call at the start of the challenge.
Yeah, he took attendance. That was interesting.
That was very strange. Mm-hmm. Saucy Jeff.
Okay.
Having some fun with it.
Yeah. He's got to. All right. Carla is getting the fishy. So that answers that question. And then I guess one last question, Steven. Karen wants to know, do you think that there will be a double boot pre-merge? There wasn't one in the premiere, and I assume we need at least two in this season of the episode count.
I think there will be. I might get, I mean, certainly a double boot. I mean, pre-merge, maybe.
Okay, hear me out. I don't think that they have to do it, because if you remember that the last two seasons, they did a 2-hour merge episode. So they kicked two people off in the premiere, but then they had in season 41, basically a non-elimination week to be continued. So they had an hour of the show where nobody got voted out. And then it was all in one night, but they did that again in season 42. So
you think two people go home?
I don't even think two people need to go home at like, again, I think it's like, weeks of episodes. So maybe we get a 2-hour episode along the way with two boots, but I don't think we necessarily need a double boot pre-merge.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So we'll see. There you go. Keep an eye on that. I think we'll have a 1-hour merge episode and somebody gets voted out at the merge and we don't spend 2 hours on that.
Okay. I like it.
Yeah. All right. Steven, anything else about episode 4? We got
most of the things. I mean, there was the Gabler Ellie fire making tension. Mm-hmm. That was one thing we didn't talk about. Sure. You know, sort of captured the Gabler Ellie mm-hmm. tension that seems to be happening. That's basically it. I mean, what do you think, Gio? Is he playing too hard, Rob?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
question. Do you think Gio's playing too hard?
Not really. I mean, I think he's saying a lot of Sandra things of, you know, I'm fine, anybody but me. It doesn't seem like he's got that much going on.
But he was saying, you know, he really was targeting Cassidy. Like he came out of the gate mm-hmm. with Cassidy and like did the whole, you know, I'm running things. You know, even a Survivor Eminence like David Bloomberg was so sure. Oh, my gosh. Gio's saying he's running things. He's going home.
I did write in my notes when that happened, like, this is bad. And then also that Gio said, oh, I'm excited to go to tribal council. So I think he got two things in a row that were very bad. But then we just went all in on Lindsay then to the point where I said, okay, this has to be a decoy.
Does this fracture Carlo's relationship with Gio? You know, because I mean, Carlo was the one who was like, you know, she doesn't want that. She didn't like that.
I don't think that it will in any way. I think that if anything, that does fracture Gio's relationship with Cassidy. But I have a feeling that he was the shot in the dark guy. Yeah. I think that
we had some confessionals from Carlo, like not liking Gio's bossiness.
Yeah, because it was going to be like, hey, Gio, Lindsay's writing your name down tonight. So you better put a vote on somebody else, because what if she does the shot in the dark or what if she has an idol?
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, the whole tribe was clearly on the same page. I mean, that was the thing. Like, there was not a split. It looked like there was one faction was going to go one way, the other faction was going to go the other way. You know, Ryan mm-hmm. ended up voting for Lindsay. Everyone was on the same page.
Yeah. Okay. And we'll talk about it more with Lindsay coming up on Friday. Let's talk about what else is coming up here on Rob as a Podcast. The Amazing Race 34 is going to be back. Episode 4 of The Amazing Race 34. It's going to be the business end of a mega leg. Mike Bloom, Jessica Lisa, and I will break it all down coming up tomorrow on Rob Has a Podcast. Be on the lookout for that. I will also have an exit interview with whatever team gets eliminated from the Amazing Race on Thursday. Then, Steven, it's CBS Reality Wednesday. Jeff is telling you, get hyped. It's Survivor. It's an Amazing Race. And it's the real Love Boat. And so later on tonight, I'm going to get together with Jenny Autumn and Kirsten McInnes. And we're going to talk about episode 2 of The Real Love Boat. What would it take?
Wow, that's late. How late do you stay up? Sorry. Look,
you got Steven. That's my calling. What would it take to get you to watch an episode of The Real Love Boat?
Like a single episode?
Yeah.
I mean, I can send you my hourly rates for like work. It would be an hour of work.
It wouldn't be like extra like pain and suffering to watch The Real Love Boat.
But wouldn't, I mean, to like, would this be hypothetically to talk about it? Because then wouldn't I have to like watch all of the episodes to know what was happening?
I mean, I think you could jump in at any point.
I mean, how will I know what the relationships are? Mm-hmm. I mean, real love is a serious thing.
That's true. It is. It is the real love boat. I don't think it's necessarily like the emphasis is on real love.
Oh, it's not the real love boat. It's the real love boat.
It's not a boat where you find real love. It's the like the real life version of the love boat.
I see. Well, that's disappointing.
I know. That's interesting. I think they would like underline the words real love if it was the real love boat.
I assumed it was the real love boat. I was just joshing. More grammar. I told you grammar was fun.
All right, check out our recap of episode number 2 of the number 1 Real Love Boat recap on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts with myself and Kirsten McInnes and Jenny Om. Steve, how about The Mole? Were you ever watching The Mole way back when?
I see. I see a lot of people.
You would enjoy this, okay? Yeah. Go check out. It's on Netflix. 5 episodes have dropped in week 1 of The Mole. It's back. I really think that you would enjoy it. It was very fun. Really good cast. And so people have, if you've checked it out, check out our recap. I've got to join the Mole Patrol. Josh, Jessica Leitz, and Brooklyn Zed. They went back and they, during quarantine, during COVID, they covered season one and season two of the original Mole. Had no idea that the Mole would ever come back.
Wow. Do you think it came back because they saw all this internet interest?
That's what people are saying. And so I got to join them. And on Monday night, we recapped all of week number one. This Monday night, we'll be back for another Mole Monday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern time. So check out week one and join us then again for week number two of the Mole. You really would like it. That's my, for you could skip the Love Boat. Check out the Mole. And of course, congratulations to our great friend, the baby boy, Bryce Isaiah, hit a milestone this week, Stephen. 200 podcasts.
Oh my gosh. That's crazy. Good. Congratulations,
it's
Bryce.
It's a lot of podcasts.
It's a lot.
Yes. And of course, everybody, you know, realizes what a great talent Bryce is. All the amazing topics that he covers in the Purple Pants podcast. Check out episode number 200 with special guests, Dr. Jatia Hart, also Brooke Kamhai from The Amazing Race, and much more as Bryce celebrates episode number 200 of the Purple Pants podcast. You can subscribe at robinsonwebsite.com/PPP.
They got to bring Bryce. I mean, Bryce is, they got to bring, that would be such a fun.
What are we even doing if they don't bring him back?
For like an all-star season. It's just like
the, you know, challenge. For, what are any of these shows doing? Real Love
it's
Boat?
It's crazy. It's, I mean, but how great would it be for a Survivor season? You know, you don't have to sell it. You know, the true fans would love it. Mm-hmm. You know, he would obviously be a great character.
Sure.
He's in super good shape.
Bryce and Wendell for The Amazing Race.
Even the people who don't really remember, you know, who like are the casuals, they'd be like, okay, like they brought back some, you know, like the third boot from Survivor 28.
Like, oh, like, I get why they brought this guy back. Yeah.
Like he was a big, even back then he was like, well, this guy was gone way too soon.
I remember saying that. Yeah.
I said that too.
Yeah.
Maybe to each other.
Okay. I'll have to go back and watch the footage. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. There you go. Purple Pants podcast. And then Taron Armstrong got to talk with Joseph. He's 25. He's a lawyer. And Taron got to talk to him about his Big Brother game. Check that out on robhasawebsite.com.
Yeah, you rarely give the occupations of the guests. You never say like, you never tell me the guest's occupations. I like that.
Yeah. Okay. He told people he was a personal trainer. He's in incredible shape.
Yeah, he looked, I mean, even from that still photo, I could see that he was, you know, I couldn't tell his sharp legal mind, but I could certainly see he was fit.
Yeah. All right. Well, of course, it is a great time to become a patron of Rob as a podcast because you get access to our patron podcast feed. Of course, you get to join us live. I am giving out the link for the patrons to join us live when I talk to the survivors on Thursday. We take your questions live and access to our Rob is a Podcast patron community on Facebook and on Discord. So go ahead and jump in if you want to be part of the greatest reality TV community of fans on the internet. Okay. I'll be talking with Chanel 8 p.m. Eastern if you want to join us for that conversation live, and it'll be up for everybody else later on Thursday night. Make sure you subscribe to Rob's podcast, robhaswebsite.com/subscribe. All right, Steven, anything else fun coming up for you?
I can tell you something not fun that's happening.
Oh,
to me.
No.
I'm watching the finale of the Challenge CBS. It's terrible. All those things people said about it are terrible.
Yes. What prompted you to watch it today?
I just hadn't watched it yet.
Yes.
You know, and it was time. I mean, I've been like, you know, holding it off because I'd seen all the terrible. I mean, I just hadn't had time to watch it. There was no psychodrama around it, but it's terrible. So upsetting. I mean, you know, they let one player time out of a leg and they didn't let another player time out of a different leg. And they eliminated her.
Yeah.
And what was so upsetting
this is a great take.
You're assuming you're being sarcastic. Yeah, I saw it all the time. Okay. But here, let me recap what people were saying, which I now understand. Now I can say it from the fullness of knowledge.
Yes.
The producers were all there. Any one of the producers could have told her, like, hey, you're gonna get eliminated if you don't finish. Nobody told her that.
The Angela thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just got to the Sudoku part. So, I mean,
wait until
next week.
wait till you get to the end, Steven.
Yeah. I know. I mean, I'm dreading
it. That's like not even in the top 10 things of the outrageous.
And the Enzo, I mean, my God, quitting during the swim, like, oh my God, that was, that was terrible.
But you could have eaten the onion though. You would have had no problem with that.
Onion, my God, I love onions. I love raw onions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you? What about you?
I mean, I think I would have done. Tyson said that you could just basically throw up as much as you want.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's nice.
They can't tell like how much you've like swallowed, right? You could like, you know, chew a lot.
He said a lot of people were doing that. Like, take a bite. I'm throwing up. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
No one's checking your vomit. Maybe they should.
Nobody's checking the vomit ever.
Yeah. Okay. See, that's the difference between the challenge and Survivor. And Survivor, they would check your vomit. Mm-hmm. They would, you know, they would really, they got a lawyer on hand to check, to go through the vomit.
Is it Joseph?
He does it. He's like flexing while he does it. He's so strong.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We got to wrap this up now. All right. Thank you so much for joining us, everybody. Take care. Have a good one. Bye.